Good afternoon, Minister and your entourage, as well as members. You are welcome to this meeting. We are having... Today you have a different experience from your Wednesday experience. You are used to having your meetings until lunchtime. But because of members of parliament, you are members 24/7. Today we are starting at 2. But I want to make a special appeal to the department. Don't chat with us. Share with us crucial information so that at least by 6 o'clock latest we'll be done. When we looked at our agenda items for today, we assumed that let's rank you according to the order of those who speak more and those who speak least, so that we are able to manage those who take 10 hours to explain a 10-minute thing. We started with the one we know is not going to delay us, and then you'll see what is said about the others that follow. But I hope, DG, that was communicated to you because we requested that upfront. It's not that we are saying don't say what is important, but make it a point at least that we really, really deal with issues that affect the nation more than the by-the-way thing. With those few words, you are welcome. The minister has already indicated that due to her hectic program, she's gonna be able to be with us for an hour. So when people see her sneaking out, it must not be as if she's running away from the meeting. That's the indication I got from the department. Thanks, members. Secretary, can you take us through?
Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon to the members, good afternoon to the Minister and the Department. The agenda for today, Wednesday, the 14th of February 2018, is as follows. We will start by indicating the apologies that we have received, then it will be the adoption of the agenda, and then we'll go straight to the briefing by the Department of Labour on the 2017-18 second quarter reports of the following entities in this order: Productivity SA, followed by NEDLAC, followed by UIF, and lastly the CCMA. The committee will deliberate on those presentations. I'm not sure, Chair, whether after each, but Chair will indicate how the committee will deliberate on the presentations. Then we'll have the consideration of the draft minutes of our last meeting of 31st January 2018. Thank you, Chair. I only received two apologies from Mr. Muteka and Mr. Kawama. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Sagasa. Those are the apologies together with the outlined agenda. Can I then request comments from the members on the agenda as outlined? Are we then adopting it as is, or would love to rearrange the order of the items? Over to you, members. Honorable Dolasha.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good afternoon. I propose that we adopt the agenda as it stands. Thank you.
Any seconder to that? Honorable America. Happy Dark Valentine's Labour, because I don't see anyone wearing red and white yet. So it means this committee is made up of people who are having Valentine days, 365 days. Well done, guys. With that, let's then move to our agenda. Minister?
Thank you, Chairperson, and let me also join you to say Happy Valentine's Day. I don't want to say I don't believe in it, but nevertheless, Happy Valentine's Day. Chair, We agree on the agenda as well, but thank you very much. And I just want to apologize, Chair, that as we have said, I'll be here for an hour, and then but the Director General will be here. And the presentation, I think what maybe we have to focus on is where sometimes we had challenges on how we're going to integrate those issues into our new APP for 2018-19. And we believe that also you will give us the guidance on how we have to deal with some of the issues probably that emanates from our presentations that we presented last year. It's unfortunate, Chair, that you have already adopted the program, because if it was not the case, I was thinking that maybe if we can have the presentation by Productivity SA, UIF, and CCMA, because some of the programs, they overlap, since unemployment insurance in some cases is the core funder of certain projects. But nevertheless, I think we will allow that process to unfold as you proposed. But Chairperson, I must say, I want to thank you as the Portfolio Committee to keep us on our toes, and I hope you will be happy with the progress that we have made, even if there are some challenges there and there. And we believe that by doing so, we'll be able to continue to make these programs forward. And the DG will lead the program and introduce the officials that are here, who will be making presentations. And at the same time, Chairperson, without wasting time, I do believe that during the presentation of the annual performance plan and our strategic plan, some of the issues will be fully highlighted during that particular process. Thank you very much.
Honourable Baker.
Sorry, it's not my turn to speak, but I just have one or two suggestions. The one suggestion is that when we do go through these reports, for the sake of brevity, because I know that Mr. Murupeng's got to catch a flight back at 5 o'clock this evening, that we go through the areas that are, instead of going through the whole report, I think most of us have read it, go through the areas that are challenging and the highlights of the report are maybe the ones where they feel their problems, as opposed to going through each one. We've all read it and we've seen it. It's just one of the ideas. Obviously, I understand that the Minister has to leave, but I do thank the Minister because she has now come to our last two meetings, which is a breath of fresh air, and I certainly thank her for that. I think it's wonderful that she has now seen at our portfolio meetings. But also, before the Minister does leave, maybe she can tell us whether the PIC has paid back the 5 billion rand that came out of the budget out of our funding from the Department of Labour, because that was supposed to be paid back today, or I think tomorrow morning. So I'd like to know that. And then I'd like to congratulate the DG on his montage beard that he has. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Bagram. I think what he's proposing is what I have already requested, that go to areas that really matter, without taking us through each and every slide. But on the PIC issue, I know your love for the minister makes you ask questions that are not even on the agenda. So I want to propose to you that as the minister is sneaking out, I won't penalize you for carrying her back so that at least she updates you. You were part when we adopted the agenda. We did not include the PIC matter. Over to you, DG.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good afternoon to Chairperson and the honorable members. Let me take this opportunity and introduce the the delegation from the Department of Labor. We want to start with Productivity South Africa because they are the ones who want to do the presentation. The CEO of the Productivity South Africa, Mr. Motunye Motiba, he's going to run with the presentation. He's with Dr. Sibusiso Sabela, who's sitting on that corner. So as and when they present, Chairperson, I will do the introduction so that we don't waste time. And we have already informed them that they must move very fast and also focusing in the areas where there are challenges. Thank you, Chair. Over to the CEO.
Chairperson and members of the committee, good afternoon. In the interest of time, as it was indicated, I would just like to refer you to slide number 9 of the presentation. In that slide, we're actually giving a reflection of the what we call the highlights of our performance over this period. Just to indicate to the committee that in terms of the core business of Productivity SA, as explained in the previous sitting, there are two things that we do. At one level, we focus on job preservation, which is the areas where we're talking about ensuring that when companies are in distress, we actually intervene so that we minimize retrenchments or save jobs. It is for that reason that if you look at that slide, we are giving you an indication that during this period under reporting, April to September, we intervened in companies and were able to save over 4,700 jobs. The second area of our focus is around employment growth and productivity. Growth is more about income as well as our contribution to the GDP. To that extent, we then intervened in 3,630 SMMEs as well as cooperatives to ensure that at least we train them on productivity interventions so that they become productive and competitive. Equally so, we've identified champions who must actually move and drive the productivity movement in the workplaces so that both workers and management have a thorough understanding of productivity methodologies. It's issues about Kaizen, 6S, and so on. 5S and so on. So during this period, we're able to train 236 champions, education and training, development practitioners, and we always in those areas give you against a target of 120. And then there is also the program that we call Workplace Challenge Program. In terms of that program, we identify various sectors, including manufacturing, mining, and agriculture, and we intervened in 177 companies against a target of 155. Just the highlight of our performance in that regard. And then next, I would like to take you to slide number, let me start with 13, so that when I come back to slide 12, I can give an indication of exactly what I'm talking about. If you go to slide 13, you then will see the picture in terms of our performance as per program. What we did there, we gave you quarter one and quarter two, but I'm going to focus on quarter two. That in terms of corporate services, we had three indicators and we achieved two. In terms of human resources, we had three, we achieved three. In terms of marketing and communications, we had four indicators and achieved three. And then in productivity organizational solutions, we had three and achieved three. Value chain competitiveness, we had four and achieved two. Turnaround solutions, we had two and achieved zero there. And overall performance of the entity for the quarter two, it's 68%. So we have shown you areas where there has been an improvement and areas where there has been a decline in terms of if you compare that with quarter one. And then if you go to slide 13, we just bring it differently to talk about particularly the areas that focus on what is it that we particularly did in quarter two, and you can see that our performance is at 68%. Now, after having given you that information, if you go to slide 12 summarizes the entire presentation, the bulk of it. Because then we pulled areas where you have seen red, where I said in this area we underperformed. So we just pulled specifically those areas where we underperformed so that we're able to explain to you where lies the problem. If you look at the first area, it's in corporate services. And in that area, we had a target that talks to the business model innovation, that is, the report will be developed and recommendations implemented. We did not achieve that in quarter two. The reason for that is that this is a sort of a turnaround for productivity, as say. So we had actually overestimated our planning that we would achieve this by the end of quarter two. We had not, because we had to extensively consult internally. I'm on slide 12, Chair.
Excuse me, what slide is that? Because seemingly members are a bit confused. Some are looking for that slide they can't get in the presentation. What slide number is that?
Slide 12.
You have to correct that, because in the package that we have, we don't have that slide. So what I wanted to propose, I'm not sure, Zolani, whether people that are controlling life here are closer, so that at least we use the one there, but you increase your font so that at least it can be visible.
Maybe just to explain the heading, it shows underperforming non-financial targets. That's the heading of the slide.
Page 6 on the printed document. The page on the bottom 6 and the slide.
That page is missing in the presentation. It's 5 and then it goes to 7 in the copies that we have. So whoever was delivering documents made sure that this side does not get page 6 and this side gets page 6. Because it's 2 o'clock, people must not trick us into having incomplete documents. Can we go to our gadgets, members? Because this presentation was sent to us so that we look at our page 6. Can we continue with that understanding then, that we are going to use gadgets, those who don't have a hard copy of page 6?
Thank you, Chairperson. My apology if it happened that you did not get the information. But what I'm saying is, what we did here is to summarize the areas where we underachieved, and just to indicate that for this quarter, July to September, we had 19 key performance indicators, and out of those, it's only 6 that we did not achieve. And the first one, it's about the business model, where I say the delay in finalizing this was due to the fact that we had to consult extensively within the organization so that you don't actually come up with a turnaround strategy which is not having a buy-in by all stakeholders, starting with the employees. But I can safely say to the committee that as at December 2017, we had the business model approved by the board. So we have dealt with that. The second area of our challenge is around marketing and communications. There we had, in terms of number of productivity awards held, what we do is we hold productivity awards first in the regions, and then it culminates into the national one. So our plan was to have 9. We actually had 7, and then we missed the target by 2. And that is about 2 provinces where we found difficulty in actually having productivity awards. That is in the Northern Cape as well as in the Free State. The challenge there is that it was actually difficult for us to strike strategic partnerships, particularly with the Economic Development departments in those provinces. We have identified this as a weakness, and we have actually managed to secure the audience of the Director General in those 2 provinces, so that at least getting into 2018-19, we don't find that situation. So I think we'll be able to achieve this target in the 2018-19 financial year, because this is an annual thing. And the importance of this, Chairperson, is that actually we use the productivity awards to mobilize industry as well as the relevant stakeholders towards behind the productivity movement. In terms of the third one, it's in value chain competitiveness, where we're talking about a number of workplace forums that we establish and we train the members thereof. The objective here is to ensure that workers as well as management actually embrace productivity and work together to ensure that at least there is a collaboration in terms of productivity interventions. We had 11 targets and we achieved 10. We missed it by 1. But the benefit here is that cumulatively, this is already achieved. That's why we say the target was actually achieved in the first quarter. So, but the critical thing is that as at the end of September, if you add cumulatively, we are on target. We are not worried that we'll not achieve this target. In terms of number 4, here it's a solution that we wanted to develop so that enterprises, both the workers as well as management, and those in the performance management in the country can be able to go on productivity as a web so that they are then able to access some of the solutions that we offer. We have not been able to achieve that. At the end of quarter 2, we're still in the development phase of the system, and having realized that there's a challenge, we then put a little bit more effort in quarter 3. And I'm confident that by the end of quarter 4, at the end of this financial year, we will be having the system up and running. I'm monitoring that area very closely. If you go to number 5, I think this is an area where we were actually sitting with a challenge. If there's the turnaround solutions, that's the one where I'm talking about job preservation, that we targeted 97 companies that are facing economic distress so that we are able to preserve jobs, and we actually achieved 32, and the deviation there is 65. the challenge here was that because there has been problems in the past with the system, you then have some level of the uptake being slow. We run the risk of actually those who have to be assisted in this area not very sure they would have resources to assist them. So you then pick up that the uptake, it's slow, and unfortunately it has gone on like that up to the third quarter that we were not able to move as we planned in this area. And in order to resolve that, we looked at the organization as a whole and said, perhaps there are two things that we need to do. The first one is to ensure that as we restructure the organization, we actually appoint what we call portfolio managers in the regions so that they are actually closer to the clients and they are able to assist, so that the portfolio managers would do two things. At one level, it will be project management, but at another, it will be business development, where they would reach out on the clients, particularly those who need assistance in terms of a turnaround. The other thing that we have done is we've forged a very close relationship with the CCMA, because then we're able to get a feed from the CCA regarding companies that are being adjudicated in terms of Section 189A. We are hopeful that that would help us much better going into the future. And then the last one is turnaround solutions in terms of a number of companies supported through micro enterprise development and self-employment support programs. We planned 15, the actual is zero. There, as I reported in the previous sitting, the challenge is, as we work with UIF, we had, as much as we plan to do this, we are not yet ready in terms of the labor activation program. So there wasn't much that we can do. And I approached the board to say, because the systems are not yet ready, we should actually take this off the APP so that we can see what happens in the future as that development. So this we took off the APP, chairperson and committee members, so that we look at what would come up in the future and remedy that. This slide is the crux of the red that you see in the presentation, and I think it can form the basis of the discussion. Thank you.
Any additions, did you? Members, that's the presentation. Any questions for clarity? Honorable B. Graham, any other hand? Okay, over to you, sir.
Thank you for the report. I've just got one question. It looks like you've set targets, and they're pretty low targets, and it looks like you've saved, call it 5,000 jobs, and you've helped out a few hundred companies. You've helped out 4,000 SMEs and 177 companies in the industry sector. And yet you've spent, I'm just trying to work out over here, what's it, about 40 million? Am I correct on that? That sounds like the worst investment I've ever come across in my life. Maybe you can just comment on that.
Okay, the second question should be coming from me. I'm looking at your presentation, slide 9 in particular, where you talk about training of SMEs and cooperatives. Are you focusing on provinces that have your offices, or you are just doing training even in provinces where you don't have offices? In slide 13, I'm looking at your choice of colors. You are having two colors there, green and red. But now when we look at your markings, even in areas where you have achieved 100%, because we have chosen to have that column being red, you have a red. Are your colors meaningless, just decoration, or they mean anything? Because where I'm seated, I'm of the view that where you have performed, it's not supposed to be marked like an area where you have not performed. but you just have a choice. If you happen to fall under this column, you are going to be red. If you are on this one, even if it's under performance, it's going to be green. When I was still a math teacher, I was not using graphs like that. Can you make me understand? Maybe things have changed since I left the profession. Thank you. And the last one is on slide 12. I had an advantage because I got a copy. For me, items 5 and 6 there, where is the support to vulnerable workers and support to companies under distress, that is the gist of what you are supposed to do amongst other things other than the creation of jobs and the other training. But those are areas where you have worst performance. In the support for vulnerable workers, for instance, your performance is 0%. Then on the other one, for distressed companies, out of 97, you only achieve to assist 32. Where would you love to be assisted? What do you think has made you to perform in that profession? Thank you. It's over to you. You can respond. Oh, Honorable America, I did not see your hand.
Sorry, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. So, my question is that if you look at, Madam Chair, the underachievement in Program 3 in Quarter 1, it has a direct impact on the underachievement in Program 6 in Quarter 2. Now, there's no indication that the underachievement in Program 3 in Quarter 1 had in fact been sort of accomplished. Safe to say, with a non-defined targets with regard to the productivity awards that was sort of updated in the presentation from 9 to 7 achieved. My question is that if you look at Program 6 and the underachievement in Program 6 is a direct result as to the underachievement in Program 3 in Quarter 1. What's being done about it? Because the mere existence of this particular department is to assist distressed organizations so that they could save jobs and also become more profitable. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Over to you, Department.
On the issue of the spending as it relates to performance, what we were grappling with is the fact that you have, in most instances, fixed costs that we were grappling with in terms of our performance. So mostly you'd find that we're still sitting with that challenge of fixed cost, but what we have begun to do now is to say we should actually have at the most 35% of our support programs allocated 35% of the budget, and the rest should go to the work that actually has to be done. So the business model that I was talking about is to address that, so that we don't find that in the future we still carry this distorted type of investment. With regard to training, we actually train across the country. What we've begun to do in the past when I came over here, we're not splitting our performance per province. Now we've allocated quotas for each province. So it's not about because we are in the Western Cape, then we focus on the Western Cape only. And into the future, actually, it will show, because what we've begun to do is exactly in the APP, that will show provincial split. And that is why I was saying the productivity hours are about mobilizing people on the ground to ensure that they join the productivity movement. And the Northern Cape and Free State are areas where we're having challenges, but I think moving forward with the interventions that we put in place, we'll be able to address that. On slide 13 regarding the colors, my apologies, indeed it should be green. Although we try and show the improvement with the green color going up, we will correct that, Chairperson. On slide 12, particularly as it relates to target 5 and 6, where we did not do well. The first one is in terms of our core business, that is job preservation. In that area, I've had a discussion with the DG as well as the Commissioner of UIF so that we ensure that at least at the beginning of the year, we are clear about what are the targets, as well as to ensure that the feed into the system, because what we're sitting with currently is that, as I said, you sit with a challenge where as much as companies would in some times wish to be assisted, then you would find we don't have funding to respond to their wish. But we believe that if we can just sort out this funding issue before we get into the next financial year, and then with our relationship with the CCMA, it's easier to have more companies coming in and we can be able to assist them. It's not an issue of capacity. We do have capable people who can do this work, but I think it's more of an issue of resources. And that is why I say in that area, we have realized that if you have people in Midrand, because we were structured in that way, the better you appoint those who do the work in the region so that they can be closer to the people that you serve. So I don't think it will be a problem in the future, particularly if you look at the ability to do work. But once we've resolved the issue of funding, I think we'll be able to deal with it. And fortunately, the minister has actually given us a directive that we should sort this thing out. So I believe that I'll be sitting with the DG as well as the commission just to say we should not go into the upcoming financial year with this challenge. The question that comes from, again, related to program marketing and in terms of quarter one, it's just a question of issue of, because we put targets for a quarter, so when we come and report, it's more about reporting in that particular quarter. However, the issue of what we did not do in quarter one, it had more to do with the marketing strategy so that we can be able to move forward, because our problem is also about people knowing about our problem. And the marketing area is the problem. We've acknowledged it, and we are addressing it. We are hopeful that by the end of this financial year, we would have resolved that. The last one that relates to performance in quarter one as well as quarter two relating to the turnaround solutions in terms of distressed companies, you're correct. If you miss the target in quarter one, ordinarily, because quarter one would be where you are attracting companies so that they are being assisted, then you run the risk of you have them very few on your books, and then you can only assist those. But if you are able to attract more moving into the other quarters, then you are able to implement form workplace forums, be able to develop turnaround strategies, you're able to implement the strategy. So if you have fewer numbers in the previous quarter, then it is going to be like that moving forward. Although part of the things that we have done is to say that our processes are also long. We were talking in this financial year about 9 phases through a company that the company should go through. And then we re-looked at standard operating procedures and we realized that we can actually do 5 things and save a company. We're taking about 9 months to do that. It has come out that we can actually take close to 5 months to save a company. So I think with improvement in also our business processes, we will begin to see a change in the way we do we assist companies in this regard. Thank you, Chairperson.
Any additions, Minister?
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, what also we must understand is that those companies that are in distress had to apply to Productivity SA for the support. And also, what was the witness previously, of which we have tried to deal with it, was the information. Because most of the companies, they were saying, they didn't understand about the role of Productivity SA. And that program has started to unfold. And at the same time, when it comes to the training of vulnerable workers, we link that with the program of the training layoff, and I do believe that the members are aware of the training layoff scheme, of which even its structure now is being reviewed, but the Commissioner for UIF will touch on that because previously the delays were based on that people will apply for the training layoff, it will be dealt with by the UI, and then thereafter it's either it will be dealt by CCMA and Productivity SA on the other hand. So we have reviewed that structure. And then we believe that now the processes are going to be far better, but also now because the companies are aware of the role of the Productivity SA, they are now starting to come on board on those issues. But also the challenge that we faced with was that most of the people still having that understanding that the skills development is still with the Department of Labor. And when we started that program that emanated from the training layoff scheme, both the UIF and skills development were the contributors to that scheme. So now what is happening is that we're also reviewing the regulations or stroke the terms of reference because they were based on the 2008-2009 crisis then. And therefore, I think after we have finalized the reviewing, then the DG and his team will come to the portfolio committee to fully review. And Chair, I think, let me just respond to the question, even if it was out of the program that was raised by Honorable Bahrain. I had a meeting with both Commissioner of UIF and the CEO of PIC on the issue that we have raised, but also the Unemployment Insurance Advisory Board, together with the Commissioner, they met also with the PIC to say how are they going to deal with that particular program. And I will appeal to the members to say, let's allow the administration processes to unfold, and then based on terms of the investments in particular, because when we say to PIC, they must invest on our behalf, we have given them the terms of reference, and then we have agreed on how we have to deal with those issues. And then immediately after that process has unfolded, then we'll be able to report to the portfolio committee. And I also want to just to highlight also the issue of the 5 billion rands that is invested by PIC to ESCOM, that one
comes from the government employees pension fund, of which it is under administered by the Treasury. Thank you very much, Chair. That's the presentation and responses, members. Seeing that there are no further hands that are up, can we go to the next item? NEDLAC. Minister, anything, or is it the DG who's leading us on this one? NEDLAC.
Today I'm just introducing people who are doing the presentations. The executive director of NEDLAC, Mr. Matota Vilakazi, is with the, I don't see the CEO, he's all by himself today. So he's going to take us through the presentation, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. Good afternoon, Honorable Chair and Members of Parliament and Minister. I'll quickly move to the table of contents. I'm sure we are aware of that.
Just hold on a second, I'm seeing a hand. Honorable Franz Kaffee.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to raise a concern, Chairperson, that the presentation that we are about to receive is also incomplete. It's every second page that's been printed. So it's going to be really difficult for us to follow the presentation in totality. Thank you, Chair.
Committee Secretary, did you send the presentations to members? Can we use our iPads? Because remember, the secretaries and others have just received, we spoke about this last week, that we have to move to using our gadgets. Zolani, if there are members who have not received the presentation, can you forward it to members now so that we use our gadgets to look at the presentation? I'm avoiding a situation where we'll be delayed by the production of these documents because we don't have a luxury of time. I just want then to apologize to members because I think my team here was also supposed to take responsibility of the production of documents, not solely the department. Okay?
Page number three, slide number three, which specifically deals with the strategic objectives of NEDLAC. And then I will move to slide number five, which is just there for comparison purposes, which is quarter one. In terms of our performance for quarter one, we achieved 91% in quarter one of overall performance of NEDLAC in terms of all the indicators that we have. And I will move to slide eight, which deals with quarter two performance. In terms of administration, we had 14 targets there. We achieved 12, which makes us to hit the target of 86%. And in core programs, we had 21 targets. We achieved 19, which is 90%. In constituency building, capacity building funds, we achieved all three targets. So the overall performance for the quarter was 90 for quarter two. And in terms of section 77 notices on slide 9, we had five matters that were carried over from the previous financial year, and the number of matters ongoing and not reporting in quarter two were four, and we had number of nine matters that were tabled in quarter two of the financial year. We achieved three of those, and four are still ongoing. And the summary there is we had 14, we achieved the total of three, and eight are still ongoing. Slide 10 deals with the bills legislation that we've been dealing with. In quarter two, we had those pieces of legislation. We concluded two in quarter two, which was Aquaculture Development Bill and Critical Infrastructure Protection Bill. And the others were still in progress, which is Preservation of Agricultural Land Bill, Electronic Deeds, National Road Traffic Amendment, Electronic Deeds Registration Bill, and the Sugary Sweetened Beverages Tax. And Liquor Amendment Bill was still in progress. We had finalized the Civil Aviation Amendment Bill. The COIDA Amendment Bill was still in progress, and is still in progress as we speak. And the National Skills Development Plan was in progress at the time, but has since been concluded. And the Minimum Wage Bill and Basic Conditions of Employment Amendment Bill, at the end of quarter two, it was still in progress, which has since been concluded. And Comprehensive Social Security and Retirement Reforms Proposals, that is still ongoing. We are targeting the end of March to produce the preliminary report, and the actual work of this task team, we think it will be finalized next year sometime in April. And those were the sessions that NECLEC held with the different organizations and within NECLEC itself. And I will skip to 14, the challenges and the remedial actions that we've had. The quarterly performance, some of these obviously have been, because of the passage of time as I'm speaking now, most of them have been resolved. I will just zoom into those that are still ongoing, that we still need to address. On slide 15, the finalization of NECLEC report on draft legislation within 6 months of being tabled at NECLEC. This is still a challenge which we are grappling with. It relates mainly to consultation within social partners and between social partners. So it's an ongoing challenge that we are trying to resolve. And the next slide 16, insufficient budget allocation resulting in cost pressures. Here, the funding request was submitted to the Department of Labor, National Treasury, with MTEF submissions. We are still dealing with, in the process of finalizing now. And the unfunded mandates such as the national minimum wage, comprehensive social security activities, as well as sovereign rating downgrade, these are also matters that we have actually concluded discussions on, and we are grateful for the support of the department in this one. We will be able to to fund these particular projects. And in terms of our budget, we have a total budget of 32.4 million rand, 31.8 is from the Department of Labor, which are grants, and then 430,000, which was interest received, and sundry income of about 138,000. I'll move to slide 20, which just states the situation at the time, at the end of quarter two, where we were sitting at the end of quarter two. We had spent about 17.2 million rand out of the budget of 32.4, and the variance was 15.1 at the time. And I'll move to slide 24, which gives the total expenses and the variance to date, which is the end of September. In terms of program one, we had exceeded the budget by 4%, the 50% for the period by 4%, which is almost acceptable. In terms of program two, we exceeded the target of 50% by 10%, which was mainly caused by the expenses that we incurred through the unfunded mandates, like the national minimum wage work, the comprehensive social security that we incurred. And in program three, we spent 25% by the end of quarter two. And the reason for that is that most of the expenses for program three, which is capacity building funds, constituencies, mainly business and labor, use their budgets mainly in the third and fourth quarter. So we hope by the end of, when we come again to report on quarter three, this the situation would have changed. Thank you, Chairperson.
Any additions? That's the presentation, members. I'm noting Honorable Bagram, any other hand? I just want you to clarify me on one issue. You are hammering over and over again, national minimum wage, unfunded mandate. This is a process that started in 2014. Why didn't you budget for it? Why is it deemed unfunded mandate? Honorable Bagram, over to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's exactly one of the questions I was going to ask. It doesn't make any sense at all. In fact, following on from your question, Madam Chair, there's going to be ongoing expenditure in quite a volume with the national minimum wage, including the committee that's going to be set up. There's going to be a permanent wage committee or whatever you call it, and that's going to be quite an expense. So I'd like them to comment on that and to tell us how they're going to fund that and whether, in fact, the DG has looked at this issue in reality. I do want to have a look as well at the overall expenditure. If you have a look at the overall expenditure, it is, let me just have a look at it up here, it's about 32 million rand, if I'm correct. And the employees, the compensation for employees, you've budgeted about 12 million. So that's just over a third for employees. I particularly think it should be higher than that because you're not doing anything else other than employing people and putting out decisions and that sort of thing. And I see goods and services is 9 million. You've budgeted 9 million for that. Is that for temporary employment? Is that for consultants? I'm trying to work out what that is. I presume it's for consultants. And you have said in slide 25, I think it is, 25, that salaries on temporary staff and then computer software and license renewal. Maybe you can just explain to us how much is actually spent on temporary staff and consultants. So thank you for that.
Responses?
Thank you, Chairperson. The question about why the national minimum wage was unfunded, as members would remember that we are reporting on the budget that was submitted to the department in July, August. That was the time it was finalized in 2016. Actually, that's what we are talking about here. At that time, of course, it was approved after that, and at that time, no one knew exactly the enormity of the challenge of the national minimum wage. At the time when this was done, no one knew that we will be dealing with this work for over 2 years. So everybody thought it was about to be finalized, and the extensive work that we've embarked on, especially around funding and employing of consultants and panel of experts and all of that. So initially it was not anticipated that it would consume a lot of time and a lot of funds. But yes, we have now concluded the matter. It will no longer be an issue because we have finalized the funding proposal with the department on this one. And in terms of ongoing funding for the commission, the National Minimum Wage Commission, that will be funded separately by the department. It will not be coming from funding of NEDLAC. And in terms of employee budget, the total budget for compensation of employees is about 13.9 million rand. It's not 12. Let me just go to that slide. Yeah, it's 13.9. It's like 20. That's the total in terms of the entire budget. And there was a question about temporary staff. We have learned now in the coming years we will be budgeting for maternity because most of the temporary staff that we had were replacement staff for colleagues that went on maternity. We had four in this particular financial year. So going forward, it's something that we are going to budget separately. We've been advised so by the AG as well as our internal auditors. Thank you.
Okay, I'm noting your hand. I'm going to give you now. But before, maybe if there are additions, they'll respond to what you want to make a follow-up on. But I'll give you before additions. Honorable Baker.
Not an additional one. I want to know how much we spend on consultants.
Okay. No, before it comes back to you, Minister and DG, can I get additions on the response on this issue of national minimum wage? The response you are giving me, if you are saying we are talking about your preparations and budgeting in 2016 on an issue that started in 2014, so it's to me, as a person who's not at NEDLAC, that implies that 2015 brought no lessons to you because you have not started anything as NEDLAC. Because if you had started something on the processes of national minimum wage, you could have seen that it's going to consume a lot of your funding. So you started planning late, and now you are saying it's an unfunded mandate. Let me not get a response this side. Let me now get a response from this side. Is that how you directed your entity to treat the national minimum wage, something that is going to benefit workers as just one of the programs? As a result, it's an unfunded mandate. A big issue to be an unfunded mandate, not in our lifetime.
Chair, thank you very much. I think the executive director of NEDLAC, when he said it was an unfunded mandate, he was referring to a number of activities that took place there that were not part of the what we originally budgeted for the national minimum wage. For instance, we set up the committee of principals. And every time the committee of principal meets, the expenses that are incurred. And secondly, there were a number of decisions that were taken by the technical committees that necessitated that we must go beyond what we have allocated. And that resulted in some of the activities being classified as unfunded. The research work that was done, and we might have, in fact, underestimated the amount of work that was going to be done. And it's just maybe the terminology that we're using is not correct, but it's a fact that there were a number of activities that that were undertaken that fell outside of the allocated funding to NetLink in as far as the national minimum wage is concerned. I would like to indicate, Chair, that it is not in any way a reflection of how we viewed the whole issue of the national minimum wage. I think the fact that we made resources available is an indication that the indication of the importance with which we view the matter of the national minimum wage. The second issue that I wanted to add on to what the ED has already mentioned is the issue of the National Minimum Wage Commission. We already have an allocation from National Treasury to set up the National Minimum Wage Commission, and we are in the process of doing that as a department so that the funding is sorted. I think there was another issue that Chairperson Honorable Bagrim raised with regards to the 9 million. The 9 million is the actual expenditure. I think the Honorable Member might have looked at it as a total budget of under goods and services. It's actually the actual expenditure during the first two quarters of the year.
Any other comments? Minister, thank you, Chair. I think Chairperson, as the DG, has responded. One of the issues probably that was not budgeted for them, but of which the department, particularly through the LP and IR branch funded, was the summit where international representatives came to do presentations, and that one was not budgeted for under the issues of the national minimum wage. And also, I think as well, the meetings that were held now and again, precisely because also when we said we need to investigate, there was a time frame when that work should be done. But unfortunately, it went beyond that. But we were able to fund it through the labor market policy and industrial relations. So yes, I think maybe the language, but I think the executive director can use that language because it was not funded through the NetLink precincts per se. But also on the issue of the National Minimum Wage Commission, in principle, we have agreed that the secretariat will be permanent, not the whole commission per se. Because currently what we have the Employment Conditions Commission, of which we're saying maybe we need to relook at whether we can say that structure should form part of the National Minimum Wage Commission, but only the secretariat will be full-time. Thank you very much, Chair. But also will be guided by the legislation as before you, members of Parliament. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. At least I'm clarified now. I got worried. Maybe it is because I wanted it in English, not in financial terms. So it was explained initially in financial terms. So I've heard English now, so it's fine. Any further clarity-seeking questions, members? Can we go then to the next presentation, which is UIF? I think we are doing well. As a result, you can be allowed to grab a cup of tea whilst we are proceeding, because we're not going to have a tea break.
Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Bagram, is UIF that is going to present? I know those that are your friends and those that are not your friends. Unfortunately, Mr. Mafata is not here yet today. Okay, DG.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Commissioner Maroping is here with Ms. Bafeni Ramanyini, who is the Deputy Director responsible for Budget, Expenditure, and Bank Reconciliation. Over to you, Commissioner.
Thank you, DG. And good afternoon, Chairperson and honorable members, and our mother, the Minister of Labour, plus my boss, the DG. I'm also going to be as scientific as my other colleagues were, and just go straight to the key slide that speaks to the issue that we're addressing. First, if you can just go for me to slide 14. Maybe just go back to 13 quickly. I think on this slide, Chairperson, what we are highlighting as URF is an improvement in our performance from quarter one to quarter two, that we are reflecting an 80% improvement from 50% to 58%. That shows that some of the plans that you have in place are starting to bear fruits. If you can maybe go to slide 17. Members, what I'm highlighting in slide 17 to slide 19 are the areas, the pain points, the areas that we haven't met targets. But I think what I want to highlight to members is these slides from 17 to 19 are the areas, if you recall, for the past couple of years, our turnaround time has always been 5 weeks. And last year we took a decision that we need to give decisions to South Africans much quicker. And we changed our turnaround time to between 15 days, 10 and 5. And what I can confirm now, members and the chairperson, is our performance has actually surprised us in that we are now giving decisions much faster. 80% of South Africans who apply for benefits at URF are now getting a decision within 15 working days as compared to 5 weeks or 35 days, which for us is a drastic improvement in how we are now providing service delivery to our members. But we didn't just want to celebrate the 80% shift or to drive this percentage within 80%. But we've also started to put some interventions in place so that we make sure that we sustain this performance and it gets better the rest of the year and also next year. First and foremost, we put about 60 self-service instruments across the labor centers. We also have appointed the 258 labor CSOs that we're talking about now. About 90% of them have been appointed, just remaining with a few percentage. And I think by quarter three, when we report for quarter three, the percentage will be different. We've also changed the labor centers. Previously, our labor centers was a post office. And now we are converting our labor centers into end-to-end processes. And at the time when we are reporting for quarter two, we're sitting at about 60%. And I think by quarter three, we are approaching a much bigger percentage. So when you go to the labor center, you get your services right there and then, you don't get to refer to the provincial office. We've also started the process of procuring free Wi-Fi for the labor centers. So they are able to go to the labor center and use your phone to access what UIF and the department offers. To make it easier, we have a service delivery improvement plan that focuses on key things that will drive improvement. The DG also, in his efforts to help us drive a culture of accountability, he's introduced extended desk comms that brings across all the leaders of the labor centers into one area so that people can learn from each other and share experiences. And I think part of that is to hold the labor center heads accountable for their performance. And I can tell you now how things' performance has improved in leaps and bounds. Gauteng, KZN, and Western Cape are our key volume drivers, and also the key provinces that makes the minister's phone to be a call center. And what I can confirm, Gauteng has moved from 86 in quarter one, 88% in quarter two, and as at quarter three, they've now achieved targets. And it shows that the instruments that we put in place are starting to bear fruits. KZN has also met targets, and so is the Western Cape. Other provinces are coming up slowly, but we are positive. You can go to slide 23. I think what I'm showing here, okay, let's keep. I think there's a, just go back again. Yes. Okay, in slide 20, members, what we're reflecting here with this slide is how quickly does our South Africans get money in their pockets. As you can see, 90% of our payments are in the money in the pockets of our, of South Africans, and thereby relieving poverty as quickly as possible. And if you can see, our target is 95%. We're already sitting at 98%. So the wheel is already beginning to turn in how UIF provides service. Next slide. And I think here, I just want to reflect to the members that UIF is part of his endeavor to support the ease of doing business with South Africa. We are also already now offering a registration certificate to companies within 2 days. 98% of the people who come to apply for a registration certificate, they get it within 2 days. And for us, it's a reflection that in our endeavor to support a country that find it easy, in an endeavor to support small businesses and also investment in the country, we're also processing much faster. Just continue. Yes. I think also the other areas I just want to highlight to members in terms of our financial positions. As I'm closing, UIF continue to be in a financially healthy position. Our finances are in a good position. There are two areas that are of concern. First is poverty alleviation programs. Poverty alleviation programs is driven by mainly your training layoff schemes. I think what we've picked up with training layoff schemes is the voluntary nature of training layoff schemes. It leaves the decision so much to the companies to apply for interventions, as I think Dr. Mutiba touched on in the TG earlier. And because of the voluntary nature, it makes it difficult for companies, for us to even increase our budget. We may have budgeted about maybe 400 million for a year, but because companies are not taking up the scheme, it makes it difficult. But what we've done as well, we've already done a diagnosis of the training layoff scheme and see just where we can close the gaps. I think in our previous appearance here, when we were presenting labor activation, we did present some of the key deliverables that we've achieved on training layoff schemes to close the gaps. And one of those was to closing the gaps on the duplicated effort, where you find certain work is done by CCMA and UIF duplicate the same effort, and we are closing this gap. The intention is to do this work within 20 days to give companies a decision. And we are gearing ourselves up so that come 1st of April, we are able to execute as such. We've already concluded all the research and all the analysis. We are having a workshop tomorrow just to tighten up so that come the 1st of April, we start the process. The other area that is driving our finances is around benefits payable. Our benefits payable may reflect a high percentage on unspent funds. The main driver there is we had already budgeted for the Amendment Act, so that when the Amendment Act comes into force, we have funds available to start paying the benefits. But because of those areas that we didn't tighten up in the Act, and we are grateful that the committee has approved the next steps, and I think there's only one step left now, which is to be pronounced by the NCOP, and from then on we should be able to kickstart the process. We are ready also systematically to implement the Amendment Act. We've already done our programming. We've already prepared our communication machinery. As soon as it's promulgated, we'll just press play, and the communication machinery will kick in. The processes are already tested. It will just be a question of pressing play, and we are good to go. And the disclaimer, Chairperson and members, we've also moved swiftly to address issues around the disclaimer. One of the key things that drove putting UIF in a disclaimer is how we treat investments in terms of GRAP 6, 7, and 8. We've obtained three opinions from different sources, Auditor General, National Treasury, and also requested an independent opinion. All of them point to us having to consolidate. We have moved swiftly to start the process of consolidating. Prior year financials will be consolidated. We're expecting that by the 23rd of February, when audit committee sits, we are going to present consolidated financial statement to be handed over to Auditor General to audit during the interim. And as audit during the interim, it will allow us then also to pick up where, because we are doing this for the first time, where there are gaps with the prior year financial, with prior year annual financial statement being consolidated and being audited by Auditor General, so that when we get to the 2017 annual financial statements, we will tighten up where there are missing gaps, and so that we change the corner and have a positive opinion from the Auditor General come the current financial year. I think I'll pause at that and maybe we'll clarify with further questions. Thank you.
I can see Klaus gathering up. I've never heard him being as short as he was in his presentations. Well done. That's the presentation, members. Any clarity-seeking questions? Honorable Bagram? Any other hand? Honorable Sanskarsbeek? In that order.
Thank you, Mr. Maripeng. I appreciate it. Thank you. And I note that your turnaround time has improved, and I've had personal experience of that, so thank you very much. Every time I've complained, I've got quick answers. I'm still having difficulty with people phoning every day saying your online applications are like trying to walk through waist-high mud. It's impossible, absolutely impossible. Your system is slow, difficult to organize. Maybe just because I'm an old man, because maybe kids will be better than me, but a lot of the people are phoning in. I'm getting literally dozens of calls. People are having problems. The other thing they're complaining about is often your phone lines are down. Your call centers are just not functional. And again, this is regular, and I unfortunately I've been complaining to you all the time, and I know you've been trying desperately to get it right. But it's a practical problem that someone needs to come in and sort out. I'm also hearing, and I haven't checked recently, that the queues are still absolutely impossible. And people get to the end of the queue and they're then told all sorts of things. They're sent back for more paperwork. People can't find their files. It's still the same issues that I've been complaining about for the last 3 years. They're still there and it's still a real problem. The labor centers, we did speak about this a year ago, and maybe you could take a leaf out of the cap of the CCMA. You had agreed last time that, and the DG had said they were going to look into it, that you would have sort of a help desk which was efficient, quick, and people understood the systems. And I am praising the CCMA for it because I use that help desk often, but I know that when I send people there, they never come back to me. So it's, but when I send people to your labor centers, they keep coming back to me, and it's a problem. I also noticed that, you know, you're under quite a lot of pressure. Now, that pressure is going to be extended. When, please God, we've got a new president, he's going to sign that legislation that's changed, and you're going to get a lot more. It's going to put more pressure on you. And I'm not sure if you can cope with the extra pressure that you're going to have, and you're probably going to need more people out there. Just another comment, and maybe you can comment on it, but I'm finding more and more as the economy gets strangulated, obviously there are more and more people being retrenched. I think we're going to go into it in a big way by the second part of this year. You're going to see the retrenchments ratcheted up. I go so far as to say it'll double. I know that even the implementation of a minimum wage will lead to probably another million people on the streets. And I'm not sure if you can cope with that. Maybe you can comment on it. I also know that in terms of the economy, and I'm getting more questions like this, and I'm not getting any joy out of your department, is when companies deduct the UIF and don't pay it over to you. I don't know whose competence that is, but I'm falling between stools. When I go to the Department of Labor, they say I complain to UIF. It's a real problem. I can't go to the CCMA with it. So I don't really know when people come to me, the poorest of the poor, and they tell me, I've been paying UIF for 5 years, and you've got no record of it. Either the company hasn't paid it over. I don't blame you, but we need somehow some sort of inspectorate to improve on that, and I don't know if it's your competence, but maybe you can comment on it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Honourable Sankarpe.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also want to welcome the report that's been presented. When I look at the presentation, I can't find the the percentage, I see the percentage of quarter two, not the percentage, the performance of quarter two is about 58%, but I don't see further on the financial performance. So if you can clarify on that issue. Then I can't find in the presentation the performance of the provinces individually. Also, when I look at slide number 25, I see that you are mentioning the variances and action plan, and the last one, the third one, you are stating as the action to be taken to resolve the problem of in terms of the percentage of valid claims with complete information approved or rejected, that you are mentioning that the action that needs to be taken is to enhance the system to accommodate to investigation period. Can you give us a time frame in terms of that one? Would we be able to see a difference towards the end of the financial year, or are you planning to address that issue in the next financial year? Thank you, Chairperson.
Responses?
I think you saw the clouds coloring, and now you are very sure going to be sang on the Chairperson.
It's because I know you have a huge appetite when it comes to UIF matters. But now also you must tell me, why is it that people would prefer to go and pay for services rather than to come to you and make the inquiries they are making to Honorable Bakran as a practice in some body?
Understood, Chair. Maybe just to move swiftly, the online application, Honorable Bakran, we are also aware that it's onerous. We already have started the process of improving that platform. We are 85% done with changing that platform. Because currently it's only tablet-friendly, but it's not even phone-friendly. It's tablet-friendly and phone-friendly, but it's not even tablet-friendly or your phone-friendly. So 85% done, we are hoping that by the end of this financial year, it will be upgraded and also user-friendly for the phone, so that we can close that gap. With the call center, we have acquired a new technology for the call center. I think the mistake we made in acquiring that new technology that is advanced, we didn't superimpose it on our processes so that there's alignment with the processes and how people function on the ground. And that's the gap we are closing now, so that we can get the benefits of this new technology. In fact, this is the technology that will possibly be used even across the department because it's the latest in this field. So we worked on that. The queues. We are just as worried about the queues. I wouldn't want to say the queues are reducing. But what we've picked up with introducing of specialized functions at the labor centers across, and also introducing people that are managing the queues and the queue management system that is on the brink of approval. We've already acquired, went through a tender, and we are now already on the brink of introducing queue management system across all the provinces. Hopefully from the 1st of April, we'll start the implementation of the queue management system and change how we manage queues on the ground. But currently, we've introduced the manual process in some of the labor centers in Gauteng and in the Northwest, and we've begun to see the fruits of this new way of doing things with the queue management. The labor center functioning, I think one of the things that the DG has helped us with is the culture of accountability that we've introduced now with the extended tax corp. Now, that has also helped us to bring accountability on the labor center heads, that they own the process, they must run with the process. If things go wrong, we hold them accountable for the process. But supporting that as well is we are reviewing how the labor center is designed. We visited a couple of banks and we benchmarked with some of the areas just to tighten up our controls. But we're expecting the numbers to increase even further. But then this is going to be a positive increase because we've reviewed the labor activation targets to 450,000. Now, the intention is for people now to come to the labor center and use the self-service platform. Instead of applying for benefits, people will be now queuing at the labor center to look at the opportunities that are available and be directed towards training programs instead of them applying for unemployment benefits. And we're already gearing up for the labor center to be able to accommodate those roles with public employment services employing more counselors that are going to be assisting the labor centers to counsel people and direct them towards employment and training opportunities. And I think that's the route we are taking as a department. And as you direct people towards either training or employment opportunities, it's going to reduce the number of people now who come and apply for unemployment. Because we're not going to apply for unemployment. When you come, we redirect you to training opportunities and employment opportunities instead. And that's why we have increased our targets. And that speaks to the point that you've mentioned about the possible increase in retrenchments. And we've also considered that in reviewing our targets for leave activation. To an extent that even the targets for next year, quarter one, quarter two, we started preparing now in quarter four, for quarter one and quarter two, when we issue an expression of interest so that we can get people committing to start their training programs and also creating more opportunities for people. So that come with the first quarter of next year, the process is already unfolding. We are reviewing processes, we are reviewing structures to an extent that the minister has already approved the reviewed structure for leave activation. Now it's the administrative process that's undergoing. So that when this process starts, we are ready to implement. With respect to compliance, compliance is a departmental issue, and URF has a huge role to play in compliance. To an extent that we are having a meeting with a bank that are not specified at this stage. What we are looking at with this compliance machinery is when a person goes to a bank to apply for a loan, for example, one of the requirements when you apply for a loan is a payslip. And our relationship that we are discussing with this institution, and we want to extend it now to all the banks, if someone comes and applies for a loan, the requirements that your payslip will reflect that I work for Pick and Pay, as an example, there's deduction for UIF. And now the bank will then confirm with UIF if this person is indeed employed with this bank, part of the closing the gaps on fraud. Now when it comes to us and we say, but this person is not been declared with UIF, then it raises a flag for our inspection team to go now and inspect that company. And that's the route now we want to take to turn around how we run compliance, but also working with institutions that are constantly using this data to drive compliance. So we are taking a proactive approach just to turn this picture around. We apply for a loan, we apply for a vehicle loan or for a home loan or any kind of loan. When we have this relationship with the bank, we are going to close and also start narrowing the gap or closing the criminals to a corner, both the employers and your ordinary fraudsters. So we are at advanced stage now to discuss this process. But I think once the process is resolved, we'll get that sorted. Honorable Van Skalvik, I don't know how to respond to this question. On the finance performance and provinces, I think in our submission of our documents, there was a mishap because we had already prepared the financials and also broken down the performance of the provinces, but they are not in this presentation. But mine has about 47 slides that cover that piece. So we apologize for that mishap. It was not intentional. Because we did cover those areas. And with respect to the time frames that you've referred to, we've already started the process of programming our systems. The intention is that by June in the new financial year, we would have gone live to close those gaps. I think I've covered all the questions. Thank you.
Safe to say you forgot to say when are you then going to submit the pages that were unfortunately omitted? Or must we assume that at least by early tomorrow they'll be on our emails from the secretary?
Agreed, Chair.
Okay, any further additions?
Chair, I wanted to add something to Mr. Maruping's response around the labor centers and the long queues. One of the reasons that contribute to the problem is that not all labor centers are processing centers. So you'll get a labor center, you'll get somebody who is in Khayelitsha preferring to go to Somerset West because Somerset West is a processing office. So now what we've decided to do is every labor center must be a processing office. And the UIF is now putting systems in place to make sure that the resources that are required by a labor center to become a fully fledged processing center are put in place. So that's what we are doing. And when it comes to companies that are deducting UIF and they're not paying them over, we also receive a number of complaints on a daily basis with regards to this. And our inspectors go out and make sure that these companies are taken to task. So I would ask Honorable Bagrain to pass over those complaints to the department. We will we'll deal with them because that's the mandate of the inspectors to make sure that the money is deducted are paid over to the funds. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks for those responses. I've just been advised that the minister's meeting, which she was to attend, has been cancelled. So she's going to be part of the meeting until we finish. She'll be all yours, Honorable Bagrain, to ask all your PIC questions once we are done in this meeting. I think you had a follow-up, Honorable Bagrain.
Thank you. Yes, I do. And I'm very pleased that it's a true Valentine's gift that the Minister is able to spend the day with us. So thank you, Minister. I just wanted to correct you, Madam Chair. People don't come to me with a fee. They can't afford anything because they haven't been paid their UIF. But I literally get, in terms of queries, about 24 queries a week about UIF. And so it is quite high, and I'm sure it can be underwritten by Mr. Murupeng, because I have a big bat in my office, and I hit it straight through to him. So he can confirm that he gets that daily complaints from me. But they are being sorted out to a large degree. Thank you very much. I tell you what I did want to follow up on is when people are very sick and old, for instance, someone phoned me this morning, has cancer, can't move, and doesn't really have access to computers because people don't have that ability or the money to buy fancy things such as what they call laptops and that sort of stuff. It's still a real problem because they can't work that telephone system, so we've got to somehow get through to that. I am, while the minister's here, I am going to say to you, and I'm begging the minister, that you're going to need a much bigger budget. And I really believe it. I don't think that's a waste. I think you need a bigger budget. I think you need more people on the ground. I believe that people need more training. They need more equipment. This is one area of our law that is helping the real needy. And I can't even express myself enough to say this is the most vulnerable in our country. People who have lost their job, got no other income, and somehow this is being held against them. And they just can't get there. And I'm begging for a greater budget. And I know that money's tight, but I'm asking the minister to put in a big plea to the Treasury that we're going to need more, and I'm going to say the same with the CECMA, but in particular with you, people are on their knees, and we need it. In terms of that idea about when people apply for a loan and then they check, I think that's fantastic, absolutely fantastic, because it is the most disheartening thing that when you've worked for 20 years for a company, be it a small corner cafe or a great corporate, they're taking the money and they're using it to pay their telephone and not paying it over to UIF. And I found this on numerous occasions, and I thank you, DG, for allowing me then to report it to your office, because I know that Mr. Murupeng has got his hands tied and that I'm not sure what he can do about it. It would come then through to your office at the Department of Labor that we need to somehow, that's fraud. We need to contact the police. We need to do something. There needs to be some interaction between your inspectorate and fraud, because that's all it is. It's stealing people's money and using it to pay their telephones instead of handing it over to UIF. And I think I am going to report them to you. I think I've got 20, 30 cases at the moment where this is happening, and it's a real problem. And I'm also pleased to hear, DG, that every labour centre now is going to double up, and we can have that, because the queues is also a nightmare for someone who's old, dejected, lost their job, and they've got to go and sit in a queue. It starts reminding you of Home Affairs, which is another disaster altogether, but we don't want to go down that road. This is really, really an issue. So thank you, Madam Chair, for listening to me.
Any possible response?
Chair, I just wanted to add something, that we've also agreed that the unemployment insurance fund, in fact, together with the compensation fund, they need more people on the ground. And that's why the commissioner spoke about in excess of about 258 client service officers that we have already appointed. 90% of them have already been appointed, and they are undergoing training. The other thing that we've noticed that is contributing to long queues is that where people come from, our visiting points, we have what we call visiting points. Our visiting points are not functioning properly because they don't have the necessary, or they don't have all the resources that they require. So that's why we're now we're going to be introducing mobile offices. And the UIF and the Compensation Fund and the department are coming together to have these mobile offices, where a mobile office will, you know, move into different areas, especially those areas where most people do not have money to commute to the Department of Labor offices. So we'll make these facilities and these resources available in those areas. And we are in the process of procuring those as we speak, because in certain areas we will not be able to put up brick and mortar structures. So I think mobile offices will play a very important role. We already have the buses that we use as a Department of Labor, and they are fully fledged offices. So we're looking at something similar to that. We think that it will go a long way in alleviating the problems that we have, especially around choosing our officers.
Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to thank the member for recognizing that we need more budget as a department. We've been submitting to the Treasury the request for additional funds, precisely in order to employ the inspectors. But unfortunately, I think since 2013, we've been doing this, and we're told that they don't have funds. So what we have also considered as a department, I have discussed that with the DG and the commissioners, that when we do the inspections, there are particular legislation that are administered by both the funds, and therefore we had to consider that the funds can assist us to employ more inspectors, particularly focusing on the issues that relates to the legislation that they administer. And they are processing that. And we believe that the portfolio committee can also pressurize the Treasury to add more funding so that we can add more inspectors rather than to rely on the funds only. But also, as one of the issues that was, I think there was a complaint in 2016 where we said we're not going to fund one of the companies who were requesting for a training layoff because they wanted to retrain. We find out that that company was not contributing to the UIF. So
Those are the issues that also we said, let us come up with a program of educating the employers themselves as well, that if you don't contribute on behalf of the worker, then you won't qualify for a training layoff. But I must say, during the inspection where we meet with the employers themselves as well, they have requested us to say, can we also assist them to have workshops for them so that they can understand the legislation in order for them to comply. So that process has started. We've agreed that CCMA and labor market policy and industrial relations must also lead that particular program where we call in employers and employees so that they can understand all of them the impact of each and every piece of legislation that we have. Thank you very much, Chair.
Any further clarification questions? Mr. Marubeng, protocol beats you to a response. Oh, you wanted to add something? I saw your face and I was wondering, how are you going to do this? Okay. Any further clarification questions? You are doing well. Can we then go to the last presentation? So the MA. I can even be generous. I'll give you just 5 minutes break for biological purposes. 5 minutes, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Then I just want the CMA to settle. Thank you.
Can we settle in the next minute, please? Over to DJ.
CMA, Mr. Cameron Muraja, now will do the presentation, and he is with two colleagues, Ms. Anna Mukhadinyane and Ms. Bridget Mboleko. Over to you.
Thank you, DJ. Good afternoon, Chairperson, and members of the committee. Thank you, Minister, my colleagues. Chairperson, I'm going to try to beat the set records in the time taken to present. Mr. Marubin thinks he has the record on that.
You have to break his record. He has the record on that.
Now, we're Chairperson. Chairperson, it is the second quarter, so there isn't much really to report, but there's just certain key aspects I want to just focus on. To start off with, it's just to proceed on page 4 of the slide. You will see there that out of the nine targets that were set, only 4 that were not achieved. And it's not achieved in the true sense. I will explain why. If you proceed to into slide 7 and 8, that's where the reasons are outlined. The first one is in connection with the very technical target. What we've done in the 17-18 strategy, we included the statutory work that the CCMA does into the strategy. So that's what those one and two targets are about. The first one is purely that if a person refers a case to the CCMA, that case must be dealt with within 30 days. And then only 8 cases were heard outside that 8 days out of the 36,000 for that period. So that's all it means. But those cases were done in that period. And then the second one has to do with the delivery of the awards after the case is concluded. You will note only 31 arbitration awards were submitted outside the 14-day period within which it must be done, out of the 4,925 that were delivered on time. So there's a variety of reasons there that are given. Sometimes it's purely a technical issue because our awards are sent electronically. It's purely that, but not that the awards were not delivered. They were delivered, all of them. It's just administration issues. In cases where we find that the commissioner is indeed late for submitting, it's not a technical or an administrative error, you will note that the consequence management does take place to make sure that it doesn't happen again. So that's just that on those two. And then the last two on page 8. The number 3 is about the training interventions that we deliver. For that quarter, we had planned to have 16 delivered, but only 15 were delivered. The only one that was outstanding, which has now been sorted, is that one which was not due to the fault of the CCMA, because of the institutions that were supposed to do the training. There were some disruptions that were happening in that institution, so we could not deliver that one training. So it was not because there was no performance. There was a performance. But in quarter 3, when we report, you will see that, as you see, that it was done eventually. So there's no issue in that regard. And then the fourth one, actually, work was done. The target was done. The only thing that did not happen is that we did not approve or were not happy with the quality of the evidence that was presented to prove the achievement of the target. But the job was done. In as far as that target is concerned. So, in as far as performance is concerned, Chairperson, that's it. There's nothing else to present. The rest of the things are done. Proceeding to the financial reporting, given that it's quarter 2, I just want to highlight 2 parts, Chairperson, and then that concludes my presentation. And you will see also that we have tried to give detailed commentary on the financials, you know, on the slide, so that if members read, you can see why there was an overspend or if there was a saving. Reasons are given there. So I won't repeat them for the sake of time. But if any questions, the manager in finance is here to answer the technical questions that may arise. But the following points must be noted. Firstly, the CCMA is developing and has developed what we call an income generation strategy, which is before the audit committee and some of the members of the board today could not attend. The CFO is there. That's why she's not part of the team today in dealing with issues like that with the audit and risk committee. The intention is to try to pursue what DG said at some point, that as entities we must consider to supplement and support the grant we get because of the fiscal strain that it has, only in areas where it's permitted to do so. But our services are for free. There's no issue there. In those discretionary functions, mainly it's about training that we do, and issues such as doing the inquiry of arbitrator at the workplaces, and that's what we charge for. And the Act permits us to do so. So we're only limiting it to those areas where it does not affect the core function and the one we were not supposed to charge on. Coupled with that is measures we've put in place on cost saving. It has had a positive impact on our budget, which creates certain savings because we are supplementing by being vigorous on cost saving and also income generation. It's reflected in our financial statements there. So the only two areas of concern, just to mention one, it's not an area of concern, this one, our overall spend as at the second quarter was sitting at 51.8% on the overall budget. savings are sitting at about 9%. Now, the only two areas of concern is one on page or slide number 19, on the financial, slide number 19. You will note the one area is in as far as the bargaining councils, subsidies. The establishment of the bargaining councils that we accredit, what we do also because they're doing the functions of the CCM in terms of section 127, they are paid certain subsidies for doing that. And now what they do, it's just that we don't want to include that detail because it's a detailed report. You'll see the trend that people, instead of claiming per month for doing the work that they are credited to do, they don't do so until the last month, usually like at the end of the fourth quarter. And then if they don't claim, then it creates savings for us. So, but it's money that is committed that is supposed to pay for it. Then you, in 1 month, then you get a huge bill of people claiming what they should have claimed for months prior. So but we're dealing with that problem. The other additional thing that has to do with that is the additional funding that we got to assist the ailing, the MEIPC, or the Metal and Engineering and Bargaining Council, the claiming process there, and things such as those. So that is just one area of concern that I thought I should note. And then the other one is also on the overspend, which is really not a serious concern on slide number 21. This one is about the overspend on interventions we make in as far as trainings that we provide. What we do, Chairperson, we do not chase people away when there's demand for training, in as much as it may not be budgeted for. Especially for that specific quarter, like now in the quarter two, we do that and continue to provide training, especially for vulnerable workers and the outlying areas. So we know that doing that will cost us in terms of overspend, but the benefit of doing so is very important. And while at that, Chairperson, I must mention that the introduction of the minimum wage is a major issue. I was talking to the minister during the break that we are convening a very serious conference, a labor conference, where more than 500 and 600 people in less than a week requested to attend, because the theme is about the state of readiness for us to implement the minimum wage, looking at the legislative process, looking at the operational process, capacitating, most importantly, the organized labor to understand the application of the minimum wage, working together with, for example, the inspection and enforcement services of the Department of Labor, because CCM is receiving a new jurisdiction to deal with some of those issues relating to the minimum wage. So the training and preparation for that has started long before now, and we had to cater for that so that we can prepare people, not to wait for the new budget to kick in so that we can do the minimum wage or wait for it to become law. So all preparations operationally and otherwise are in a very, very advanced stage. We've provided training for that, which then is what leads to that overspend. Together with that, Chairperson, what I forgot to mention, which is very important, the education around job saving is very important. You'll see that in our performance, we've set a target of 35% to achieve that out of people facing retrenchment. We must at least save 35% of that. We are sitting at about 34% in the achievement of that target, but we hope at the end of the entire financial year we would have done so, because this component of job saving is extremely important, because that's the one that contributes directly to that challenge of unemployment and poverty. Because if we can save so many thousands of jobs per quarter and per annum, we think it's a very important thing. It's one of the greatest achievements that we have made. So in as far as challenges, in as far as finance is concerned, Chairperson, that's just those challenges. The rest of the things are in order. The health status of the organization, we're healthy there in as far as the finances are concerned, other than those areas that I've just highlighted. That concludes our presentation.
That's the presentation. Any additional questions? Thanks, members. That's the presentation. Honorable Bagram, any other hand? Honorable Van Skalkwyk? Let's take them that order.
Thank you very much. Yes, if I can start at the end, the national minimum wage is going to mean an enormous amount of extra work ongoing for the CCMA. I was trying to do some sums, and I believe it's going to add 30 to 40% extra cases. And if you have a look at the fact that you have increased by almost 1,000 cases over the last period, so you're now at about 47,500 cases referred during 1 year, and you add a third onto that, that's going to mean a lot more than what you're expecting. The national minimum wage itself will have a whole lot of cases, but you'll see that your extended jurisdiction, even if I'm challenging a monetary issue, I can come to you, I can avoid going to the civil courts. So you can imagine this is going to, so the national minimum wage will add up another 30%, and then that extra jurisdiction, which should add another 20 to 30% there, you're probably looking at maybe doubling your caseload. So we can look, we can expect by the end of next year to have a caseload of 100,000. And then you've got to extrapolate that. And I hope the minister has taken that into account, because in terms of the minister having difficulty getting more monies, this is actually going to drown you if you don't get more monies. It's going to be absolutely impossible. We're also looking at other changes to legislation, such as intervention in strikes, secret ballots, and extra jurisdiction. I don't want to go through all of that, but I was looking at that. That will then add other types of disputes onto your plate as well. So although I'm going to double it, and I'm going to hazard a guess of 100,000 cases in, say, 18 months' time, I can then add all the others, because you're going to have extra jurisdiction and all that. I don't know whether you're even starting to think about training double the amount of staff, and because we've got to start now training them, and I don't know how you're going to be able to handle that expanded amount. And then also, you were able to save 30% of the jobs out of retrenchments. I had mentioned it earlier in terms of UIF. I believe that we'll probably have about 1 million retrenchments in South Africa in the next 18 months. And I'm not sure how you're going to handle that. And I'm happy to be quoted on it, because I'm happy to be tested against that, to see how many retrenchments actually take place. Over and above the fact that I'm getting feedback from even the smallest companies saying that they're going to have to start looking at that now, before the national minimum wage is even brought in. And it's not only because of that, but people are looking at mechanization, computerization, in particular industries such as mining, farming, motor vehicles. They will all look at that. So we're looking at jobless growth, which means that there's pressure on you over the next 2 years, and I'd be interested to see where that is. I must also tell you that your call center is absolutely fantastic. I use it daily for people just to find out. It's absolutely fantastic. Can't you give it to UIF and ask them to take over your call center? If only they could have a call center like that. It's absolutely fantastic. I must also say that some of your commissioners, and I know that you weren't aware of it because we did a radio show together, but some of your commissioners are incredibly innovative. I settled a case for people through WhatsApp, run by one of your commissioners, instead of everyone traveling there and whatever. It was the most unbelievable exercise. And when I tell colleagues of mine in the United States, they are really impressed. So I must call you out on that. Just on a negative, the MEIBC is about to collapse. But I think that's a portend of things to come. I know that the bargaining councils take a load off your shoulders because they run their own disputes. I don't believe in 5 years' time we're going to have only the MEIBC collapsing. I think we can expect another 5 or 6 big bargaining councils to collapse. I'm a user of them, and I'm telling you I can see it coming. And I don't know what you're doing about it, or if there's anything you can. In terms of finance, obviously I'm begging the minister again, because of those figures I've just given, to at least double, if not more than that, but at least double your budget on that. And I'm hoping that our portfolio committee sees it as seriously as I do. I believe our chair would, in that We in the Labour portfolio strongly believe one of the greatest ills in South Africa today is unemployment. I believe that the whole government believes that as well. So if we're going to have to take money from other departments, well, we must do that. But this is a real issue. In terms of your own budget and in terms of where we're going, I believe you've got the skills, you've got the people, and you've got the systems. Can't we start charging companies and they'd pay? Can't we roll out more? You've twinned with, I think now it's, what, six universities? You've twinned with them. People would gladly pay, and I'm sure the universities would share the fees on this, where people get bursaries and whatever, and the fees would go to the CCMA as well, which you could then use to employ more commissioners. And I think every company I've spoken to, I don't speak to many, but say two, three companies a day, they would be gladly part of paying us to get training for their HR people and whatever. And I know you do a lot of training, and obviously you can't charge shop stewards and trade unions, but the companies, they pay fortunes for outside, and that's really training that they desperately need. The minister's also said that companies need the training, and they've got the money to pay. That would save them a lot of money in the future, and I believe if you brought in a business manager and actually made a business about it, you could raise a few million rand just by training companies. So just some ideas, but I do want to congratulate you on, and I'm biased, but I think on a job fantastically done. Thank you.
Honorable Van Skalkwyk, I thought the congratulatory part was only for your program at SAFM when the two of you were there. I didn't know that it would be extended even in our presence. Honorable Van Skalkwyk.
Chair, I'm mostly covered by Honourable Bagram. My question is just on the 30% of jobs that have been saved compared to, when I look at the real figure, it's 8,927 out of 29,610. Can you give an indication of which industries are affected in terms of these retrenchments so that we can have just an idea? I pause there, Chairperson. Thank you.
Responsive.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me start with the last one from Honourable Member from Skalkwyk. Mainly it's mining that is dominating those numbers. If you look at our statistics, if they drop, you know that it's happening in the mining sector. And when there's a sharp increase, again, it's still the mining sector. It's dictating. You do have smaller ones after that. Well, what we can do, Honourable Member Skalvik, is that we can actually submit the full schedule and the numbers on, you see the sectors, but mainly it's mining. And that's why we've increased the number of persons who must do the facilitations on these type of functions in the mining sector. And part of the consideration that we have moving forward is that we now have to supplement our training of our commissioners to be sector specific, because if you take general commissioners who are not quite clear about the effects and complication in a specific industry, it takes some time to resolve a dispute. So we want to now supplement our training material, especially on this type of function, because this one we think is a direct contributor to our labor market in the functions that we do. So we're going to increase the pool there. The second issue is that from our panel of commissioners, we have to start thinking also how we recruit. And we are looking at that when we recruit, we are recruiting generally, yet there are specialists really in this type of work that we can specifically recruit to deal with these kinds of cases. It will have a huge impact if we do that. So we're going to table that to the board on a specialized recruitment, which will have a direct impact on that. It's quite interesting when you look at the statistics I saw yesterday, is it today, where they published that the unemployment rate has dropped to 26.something%. And it is these type of functions that contribute to that drop. If you look at the conversion of that percentage to numbers, you can imagine what can happen if we're to double those numbers of the job saved. It contributes directly into the triple crisis. So So for us, we are very jealous about this function. The other thing that we've noted, which has taught us lessons, is that also the demographic of the commissioners we use in this function is not good. It's dominated mainly by male commissioners. We're not trying to concentrate in upskilling female commissioners into this field because the few that we have and the way they handle cases, it brings a special dimension in the resolution of the disputes and the approach, the attitude, you know, the patience issue. There's a lot of dynamics that happen there. So we want to strike a balance there so that we can try to overachieve in that one. If there's any target we would really love to overachieve in, it's this one. Because the consequence of that we can directly see immediately after doing that function. This is supposed also to be linked with the training layoff scheme. And that's why our partnership with Productivity X is very important. If you look at the entire package, is that we facilitate on the large-scale dismissals the turnaround solutions you find in the PSA. So that's when the URF becomes important on the TLS so that we can find a consolidated, comprehensive, and a very effective program which will directly contribute into the saving and trying to retrain and upskill those that may have been offloaded. So we are really focusing on that one to try to deliver. Your point is absolutely spot on. If I may proceed to the questions and the commentary from Honorable Bakran, it is absolutely correct that our caseload will increase. And the reason why we're saying that is because if you look at the 2015 amendments, when they came, they added into our caseload quite significantly. But because of the nature of the cases we'll be dealing with in the minimum wage, it's going to be bigger than that one in our view. Because it's not those complex, as you know, that some of the cases are still running at court to try to define what certain sections of the amendments mean and having a certain impact on the caseload. But this one is a very operational one, especially in terms of the new jurisdictions we're going to get. And if you look at also the category of people that it's covering, it's the type of people that you have to really help. And you have to find ways to make sure that even the system that we use is a seamless system that is able or capable to do so. When we did our budget, which was what we presented to the Audit and Risk Committee, if there's any part that we struggled with is making provision for what we just provided. Because we know it's going to be big, but we don't have the budget for it. And I had to knock at the door of the DG asking for additional funding for the 2015 amendment to cover for the 2015 amendment. So we're not over the hill yet in as far as those amendments are concerned. Now, this one is climbing on top of that one, which then tells you, because after 2 years or so, that's when you see really the impact of those changes. Now, if you combine the two, because the amendment is not just a minimum wage, because that is standalone, you've got other amendments also that are coupled with that one. So the pressure on caseload and the cost associated with that is extremely high. I'm sitting here very, very concerned about it because the one thing that we can't do is to turn away people who refer cases in this section because that's a statutory function that is for free. So the flow of cases there is going to be very high. So we are really stretched very thin. The portion that we got from on additional funding, it was not just for caseload for the 2015 amendment. It was not even fully what we asked for. We understand why. But the reality of the matter is that, and I can, like you said, I'll put it clearly on record, Jefferson, the caseload that we have to handle on the minimum wage is going to be unbearable. It's going to collapse if finance does not support it. And then it will frustrate the whole idea why we have the minimum wage legislation to start off with. So we are trying to adjust and cut elsewhere to try to make provision for the case disbursement. Which is the cases and the commission that goes there. And what is going to also be interesting is that the reach of this type of cases goes beyond what we have now in terms of the accessibility. There are a number of innovative ways that we've introduced, which is part of our presentation, where we find ways. For example, what you're referring to on the innovations by commissioners is correct. One of the things we've introduced is to do online cases online, you know, like to have an online conciliation process, which we received to some of the colleagues in Geneva that we met who introduced this product. that we can do online conciliations. But for those that are not technically savvy, they may not be covered by that. But you still need enough budget to cover for the rest of that community, and that's the biggest one that we need to cover. So it is absolutely correct that we are going to face serious challenges. We have to act now. Because the funding that we're using now, that we got on additional funding, it's mainly on training and preparing the labor market. But once they are ready, they understand, their cases will be flowing. Then you must have the capacity financially to handle it. So we are not at that stage to handle that. We can handle the training, the campaigns that we do, but it can only increase our caseload, not the other way around. So that's indeed a very spot on comment in as far as that part is concerned. It is correct that the jobs to be lost moving forward, our warning systems are telling us that it's going to increase. And that's separate to the minimum wage. This is just on its own. So that is a direct contributor to that. On the question of the bargaining councils, you are correct. One of the challenges that I had in the current budget that we're doing for 18-19 is to increase capacity that will monitor all the bargaining councils. We have 36 of them. And added to that, we have four private agencies. MIPC collapsed, but it's coming back now. But if we don't increase the capacity of those that must monitor and support the bargaining councils, it's going to follow the same route with the MIPC. And if that happens, it's going to have a direct impact on our budget because we have to get additional funding to be able to sustain the MIPC. Imagine if half of the 36 follow the same route, we're closing doors. That's the reality of it. So we're going to have to do that. On the charging with the universities, it's correct. One of the mistakes that the CCMA made, which we are correcting now, when we entered into an agreement with the universities, there was never a clearly defined return on investment by us because the training that universities are providing is our training, all of it. And they're charging to 20, 30, 40,000, they vary, and we don't regulate that. The downside of that is that those that are supposed to benefit from that, they are excluded because of the financial cost. So it's in that part it's a problem. But now I've commissioned the team to review the agreement that we have with the universities because you can't make 40,000 from one student and there's nothing coming back to us as the owner of the intellectual property of the training. So there has to be a return on investment. So we're reviewing that. Employers' willingness to pay, it's a good thing to hear. Which we'll explore. As I said earlier on, part of our innovations is that to the extent that we're able to charge, we should. But if you look at what we're charging, it's not even cost recovery below that. If you look at the resource we employ to do that kind of training, we do charge, but the fee is too low for that. So we're reviewing that because if you look at our top line in our income statement under other services, the training is one of those incomes that we get. So we are looking at that. Even when we do conferences like the one that we're doing, employers that are applying wanting to be part of the conference, they are asking to pay, which we welcome and we appreciate. So we've come up with a model on how we balance that so that those that don't afford should not be excluded. So, for example, one of the innovations is that those who did our training with the universities, we don't have to charge them the full fee because it's just a benefit that we make. But the majority of the employers that apply to be part of that conference have offered to pay. So we just have to set that fee and do that in all our conferences because 2 months ago or a month ago, we did a Shop Stewards conference. We did not charge. We had more than 400 people participated from there. But we spend a lot of money on materials, the venue that we do, which puts a strain on our budget. So to the extent it's permissible, we are going to do so. And we've reviewed that because that's a very good thing to do. Chairperson, I think I've covered all the questions.
Are there any additions? Okay.
Thank you, Chair, honourable members. I just want to address the issue about the possibility of the increase in the funding for the CCM in relationship to the caseload with respect to the national minimum wage.
Get closer to the mic, because I'm far too interested.
Do you hear me clearly now? So there are two things that I wanted to address. One is in terms of the budget proposals for the inspectorate. What we've done in terms of the inspectorate is to provide for the inspectorate, the increase in the number of inspectors, but also in relationship to the national minimum wage. So therefore, some of the concern that is raised in relationship to the caseload coming to the CCMA, as we've tried to address it, but both at an inspectorate level, and an inspection level, and enforcement level at that. But that's the first point that I'd wanted to raise. The second point that I'd wanted to raise is in relationship to the cost recovery methodology that we built into the National Minimum Wage Bill and the Basic Conditions of Employment Enforcement Strategy. Is that to the extent that the employer does not comply, and the system may find that the employer does not comply, there's the ability of the, and the CCMA must publish the cost for hearing a case in that regard. And therefore the money that, employer does not comply with national minimum wage and is found not to be compliant with the national minimum wage, the CCMA can recoup the cost for that case from the employer. So it addresses some of the concerns in relationship to the workload, in relationship to the cost to the CCMA, and we hope that in the compendium of measures that we've tried to put in place in terms of addressing the financial burden, the caseload increase, some of these will try and address those eventualities. Thank you, Chair.
Did Minister, any further addition?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, we have looked at the criticality of the training program of both employers and the workers when it comes to the national minimum wage. And with the federations that are recognized under the NEDLAC policy that we discussed with them now and again, they have a training agency that is funded by the department, and we have said they must use that agency as well to educate the workers. Even saying it's administered by the federations, COSATU, FEDUSA, and NATO. And as the executive director have said, there is a conference that will be dealing with the issues that relate to the national minimum wage, particularly when it comes to the code of good practice, because there were agreements that were taken during the discussions in NEDLAC that there should be no company that will retrench the workers based on the implementation of the national minimum wage. It's part of the code of good practice. But I think also as members of parliament and also parliament, I think if you can assist us as well through your parliamentary public education program, if you can assist us to educate the workers in particular through your program so that they can understand what impact the national minimum wage has, particularly also when it comes to the code of good practice, because all those issues were agreed by all the stakeholders on what should be the behavior of both employers and employees. I think if we can work in such a way that everybody is aware, then we will be able to deal with the challenges. Yes, of course, there is going to be, I think, I don't even want to say it's double load. Probably it will be tripled load for CCMA. I think as we have said even previously, that we are now trying to integrate the training program, particularly that will need funding from UIF, CCMA, Productivity SA, including the department, because sometimes we'll be approached by various federations to say, these are the challenges that we're faced with. Can you come on board and assist us, particularly when it comes to training? And as we speak also, we have agreed that those who are leading during the bargaining process, we have also to train them, because some of the problems, they emanate from those discussions during the bargaining process. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks. Any follow-up questions? Honorable Baker.
Thank you. I know the hour is late and I won't keep too long, but there's just three issues I wanted to raise. And I like the idea, obviously, the inspectorate being able to step in and try and resolve issues. But my feeling is that with the inspectorate being more efficient, there'll be more cases for the CCMA. Because, in fact, if the inspector can't resolve something, it has to go to the CCMA in terms of the proposed legislation. So I actually think it's going to make it a lot worse for the CCMA. It'll make it better for the staff, yes, but I think it's going to make it a lot worse. Just in terms of what the minister's raised about retrenchment because of the minimum wage, no one's going to retrench because of the minimum wage. People are going to retrench because they can't afford. That'll be, and you can never stop someone retrenching if you can't afford. So the legislation is going to be challenged in many, many occasions, and no court can come forward and say, well, if you can't afford the wage, well, you know, either you don't pay them or you retrench them. You don't just not pay, because that's just breaking the law. So you're going to have to do that. There's no way around that. It's almost impossible. I'd like to see those regulations once they're written. I'll find a way around it. The bottom line is, I think, Minister, in terms of regulations, and again, it's an idea to you, Minister, when something such as a national minimum wage comes in and creates that greater workload for the CCMA, the easiest way to regulate some of the cases that go to the CCMA is to create some sort of handbrake through legislation, through not legislation, regulation. In other words, I'd say, and I don't know what the percentage is, and I don't know if, Cameron, you've seen this, but many of the cases that go to the CCMA are fruitless. Many of the cases that go there, you can't stop anyone complaining about anything. And I've also, in my small career, watched people going back every 6 months, just making up cases. If there was a way in which, through regulation, a CCMA commissioner could assess a case and say, this is not functional, you can't come here, and it gives them a bit more power to stop the cases coming through, I would be so bold as to say about 3 out of 10 cases are actually non-functional cases. And if there was a way in which you could regulate and give the commissioners more power to say, no, we're not taking this case on, then we could possibly help alleviate some of the stresses on the system. I know it's a difficult one to try and regulate, but at least it's worthwhile to say, no, we're not going to have jurisdiction on this. Please forget about it, and then just then chase the case away. Now, it sounds terrible because people always believe they have a fantastic case, but there are cases that a commissioner within 2 minutes can see there's no value to the case, and then at least give them the power to at least cut it short. So thank you for that.
Okay. I can see the appetite to debate national minimum wage on both sides. Can I caution both sides of my hands that we are not there yet? Reserve your comments for the actual battlefield for the national minimum wage. So if, for instance, I was a dictator, I was going to say for today the phrase national minimum wage is banned from this house. But I'm not a dictator. But please, don't exhaust yourselves. Processes are still going to take you there. Any further responses to the comments made by Honorable Bagram? Because I think he was more of commenting than asking questions. But not on the national minimum wage, please. This is not a debate for that today. Minister?
Chair, I think it's only the issue of unaffordability. It's not just focus on the national minimum wage, but it focuses generally, even after the bargaining agreements, where you find that the company is saying, no, I can't afford. We have a legislation that allows that company that cannot afford to apply for the exemption. So on that one, everybody is covered. So based on your instruction, Minister, or your guide, I think we must just end there. I think we are not going to respond on others.
up until you finalize the legislation. Thank you. Thanks. That then, seeing that there are no further hands, that takes us to the end of the briefing by the department. Thanks, Minister, and your delegation. Despite the time we have set for ourselves, at least it means we know we care and we can be businesslike when we want to. Because there's nothing we have overlooked, we dealt with everything properly, still we managed to finish before the identified time. Thank you for that. If any of your delegation and yourself, Minister, are rushing for anywhere, you are free to quickly to sneak out quietly as we are finalizing our agenda as a committee. Thank you very much. Zolani, what is your take to the next item? What is the date? Members, you were presented with a copy of minutes of the 31st of January 2018. And I think because they were sent to us before this meeting, we'll just go page by page for any corrections. On page one, are there any corrections? Come again. All right. On page two. Page three. Honorable Baker. Your mic, please.
I'm having difficulty seeing pages on my actual device. I'm sorry about that. But there is one part where it says... the members of the committee deliberated extensively on the presentation on the bills. What page was that?
Page one.
Is that page one or three?
That is page three.
Three.
Yes.
I would like to move that word extensively be removed because we couldn't ask all our questions if you recall. We deliberated, yes, but not extensively because if you recall I had about 30 questions. I still got them. But you only allowed me three. And I understand that for time constraints. And so I would say the members of the committee deliberated on the presentation, not extensively, because if you want to do it extensively, I'd like to. I'd love to still challenge a lot of it, but I know we had time constraints. So that's all I'm asking. Thank you.
I don't think we'll die if we take out extensively. So next time, please use a yardstick, which is a collective, to measure the manner in which we debated, not your appetite to debate. Page four, any corrections? Then, if there are no further corrections, anyone moves for the adoption of these minutes as a true reflection? Honorable Dolashe. Seconded by Honorable Baker. Thank you, members. That then brings us to an item which is not my competence. It is the competence of the other members of the committee. Honorable Teko.
Chair, I move for the closure of the...
Closure proposed. I can see Honorable America seconds and Honorable Baker thirds. Thank you very much, members. I think we had a fruitful meeting, even if it did not take us to our 4 hours. We thought we'd go as far as there, but we managed to do our work in a period shorter than that. Thank you very much. The meeting is closed. Go and meet your Valentines now. Thank you.